right. Hello. Welcome back to This Is Your Book Club. I'm Sarah.
And I'm Jamie.
We're so glad that you're here. Welcome to August.
Can't believe it.
I know.
Already.
Have you guys gotten your new book of the month? The Book of Longings by Sumunk Kidd.
I'm so excited.
I cannot even tell you.
I just want to start reading it so bad. And I tried to wait till a little further in the month before we record. But I want to start right now.
I know, because I want it to be really fresh when we're talking about it. So I do kind of wait, but this has been on our list of two possibly being our book club book. So I've been waiting to read it. And so since we've chosen it, I'm just really, really excited. I just love the premise. And Sumunk Kidd does such a good job telling these kinds of stories.
She does. Fascinating. She's such a cool woman. I've loved her books. I know. And I don't ever really... Every once in a while, I'll go down the rabbit hole of looking into authors' lives. But since this podcast, that's kind of been my fun fact thing, is to find a little bit more about the author and learn how they got to write what they did, what they have.
Yeah.
And she, I could go on forever with her. She's, and I say with the other two books we've watched, that we've read as well, I just love these authors.
Yeah.
I have so much respect for creative people that can take this story that bubbles up inside them and to the point where they have to write it. And Sumunk Kidd describes it like that. There's just something on her soul that she can't do anything with until she gets it out and writes it. It presses
that
on her. It causes
amazing.
Her this, you know, excitement and anxiety and pressure that she just has to get it out.
I love that.
And I she speaks so passionately about writing. And I love to read, but I'm not a writer at all. And it sounds painful to me to do that. And so the thought that
I think
these
it would be so cool to write a book. Not that I have the talent or the ability, but wow.
Yeah.
I mean, to be able to sit down and come up with a story, that would be awesome. And really just to talk about their books. I feel like that's how I feel. I get so excited.
Look at this community it creates off of what you wrote. All of these people are reading it and discussing it. And it's you've such an impact you've left on the world is the spoken word, the language that you're putting down in these books. It's just
awesome.
Beautiful.
Agreed.
Anyway, so my fun fact of her today is she talks about in an interview she does... about the first time she was really impacted by a book. And she was very young and she grew up in a rural town, I believe in North Carolina, maybe South Carolina. I could get that wrong, but they had a very small library. It was an old church that was turned into a library, but she loved it and she spent a lot of her summers there. And she loved reading and she read a lot of different things. She said she read Nancy Drew and, you know, a lot of the classics, but out of all the books she read, she remembers the stories and the adventures she read. But The Adventures of Alice is one that she remembers not only the story, but where she was when she read it. She was in a field, in the grass. She was by a mimosa tree, which I'd never heard of a mimosa tree.
I haven't either.
Research on what that is. But she says she remembers laying there reading and the velvety blossom from the tree fell down into the page of her book.
Oh my.
And she left it there and she's kept that flower blossom in the book. And she just remembers just being opened up by these adventures and the creativity. And that's really what she identifies with when she talks about when she was first impacted by a book and thought that she might want to be a writer.
Oh my gosh. Crazy? That's beautiful.
Yeah. I mean, I can see the setting.
She's so eloquent.
She is. When you hear her talk, she is so eloquent. And she speaks from the soul. Like, she's just moved by the question you gave her. She's very fun. Look up some YouTube interviews with her. She's inspiring to listen to.
That's awesome.
So, Sumunk Kidd.
Even more excited
now. She's a
great
writer. She's a great speaker. She's...
Right?
Yeah, she is...
And she's tackling a topic that I think could potentially be controversial, but doesn't necessarily have to be. I'm so anxious and excited.
I want to tell you so much more about it right now, but I want to have enough things. But yes, this book, she started writing in 2014, and I'll talk about that next next week or for our next fun fact. But the original idea came 15 years before that.
And really?
She didn't feel like it was the right time that she could do
this is a different world than it was 15 years ago.
It's been bubbling in her for a very, very long time. We'll discuss more of that next week, just to give you a little
I'm very excited.
Cliffhanger.
And if you'd like to win your own copy of the Book
of
Longings,
for you.
All you have to do is jump over to Apple Podcasts or anywhere that you listen, rate, subscribe, review, and then come back to our Instagram or Facebook accounts. Just shoot us a message and say, hey, it's done.
Did it. 1, 2, 3.
Done. And then we'll enter you into our drawing for your very own copy of the Book of Longings.
The Book of Longings. Now, if you're listening when this episode comes out on Monday.
Right.
Do it on Monday. You still have time to get it on a Monday.
Yes. Right? We will be announcing it on our Instagram / Facebook social media accounts on Monday evening.
Monday evening. So if you're not listening to this until Tuesday, you should be listening on Monday.
Get listening.
Just kidding.
Well, really,
we'll do it again if you missed it. But
I know. We'd really love to do this each month and give out a copy of the book we're reading.
How cool would that be?
I know.
Because
I love giving things away.
Have fun for us.
I know. Everyone
Especially
wins.
Especially a book. What a gift.
Indeed.
My favorite kind of gift.
Okay. So, that's our book of the month. I hope you guys have our reading calendar and are reading along with us so that you can be ready to listen and chat with us at the end of the month. So get reading.
Yeah.
Or listening, however you choose. And today is What's on Your Shelf. So we're going to be talking about the books we've been reading recently and whether or not you need to add them. So Jamie, what's on your shelf?
So number one is My Grandmother Asked Me to Tell You She's Sorry.
That's a
long title, yes. Is by Frederick Beckman, and he is the author of A Man Called Ove.
Uva.
I know it's Swedish.
It is one of my favorite books of all time. I think I've mentioned it before.
Yeah, I just love the character. Have you seen the movie?
No.
The movie is great.
Where can I find it?
I want to say it was on Hulu or Netflix. Because
that's
all
I
ever
watch it.
But it's, my husband speaks Swedish. And
what?
So it's in Swedish. And it has English subtitles. So that was fun for him to watch too.
How is that? Like to read, like was it okay? Or is it like takeaway?
No, because he's just so, especially because I've already read the book, you kind of just know.
Right.
But it did not take away for me. I just love that character. I could watch,
I know.
I'm not one to re-watch movies.
Yeah,
but
I am.
I rarely, but I love that character. So, same author.
Okay.
That's that. And again, another grandmother story.
Aww.
And this grandmother, she had a very, not extravagant life, but busy, very heroic life. She becomes a surgeon.
Really?
And she, and this is like not in the time where women become surgeons. She kind of had to fight her way through. That's kind of her backstory. And this is taking place when she's living, not with her daughter, but kind of across the hall. They're in this big house that has a bunch of different apartments in it. And they've rented out all these other apartments to different people. And so the grandma lives in one, and then the mom with her new husband and her daughter live in the other, right across the hall from her in the other apartment. And the daughter, I think, is about 7. And the grandmother's gone all over the place, like in the war, being a surgeon for the war and just helping save warriors and children, and just wherever she was needed, she went. And so, but now she's got this granddaughter, and her mission was to come back and take care of this granddaughter of hers. And so this granddaughter and her have this just sweet relationship where grandma would tell all these fairy tales. So the granddaughter gets picked on at school. She's bullied quite a bit. Nobody likes her. She just doesn't quite fit in. And the grandma sees into where she doesn't open up and say, like this person at school today did this, or, you know, she's the one kind of getting in trouble at school because she reacts and then it's her fault, but nobody is standing up and saying how much she's being bullied and picked on. Right. And so the grandma will have to go to school and pick her up, or the mom will have to go to school and pick her up, and she did this, and why would she do that? And but the grandma kind of knew, and then through these fairy tales the grandma tells her, it gives her the kind of solutions to these problems, or a place to go with these feelings, or a way to deal with it. And she does it all through this wow. other land of fairy tales that this little girl just kind of envelops in and processes life through these fairy tales.
Wow. That sounds sweet.
It's so sweet. And the very beginning of the book, the grandmother's in the hospital. The little girl doesn't know the grandmother has... She knows she's in the hospital and she goes to visit her, but she doesn't know that she's dying. She has cancer and she's dead. But she leaves almost kind of this scavenger hunt for this daughter of... you have to go find this or deliver this letter here. And so she goes to do that, and they're all just kind of crazy, wild things to do. And then once she goes and delivers this letter here, she finds out about something else. And all of these letters are her grandmother apologizing to other people for certain things in their life. And so this girl is weaving all of these stories together with all these different people.
Wow.
And they end up being a lot of the people in the apartments that they live with that she didn't know their backstories, and they seemed kind of scary or they seemed kind of crazy, but she didn't really know why and hadn't really... Anyways, this grandma just kind of threads all these, you know, sews all these threads through this community, through this little girl's treasure hunt, and that they have to do with parts of the fairy tale. And it's just...
Oh.
It's so beautifully written.
Wow.
And... The grandma's funny, like, she takes the little girl to take her mind off of a particular bullying moment. They sneak out at night and steal the car. And the grandma doesn't have a driver's license anymore. And it's her car, so she's like, why can't I drive my own car?
Yeah.
And they're like, well, because you don't have a driver's license. She takes the daughter to the zoo and they break into the zoo.
Oh my gosh.
And the grandma ends up throwing... poop at the police officer, and she's just this spunky old grandma that does these crazy things, which are in turn making the granddaughter feel better or taking her mind off of what's happened, or
sure.
giving her other adventures to focus on instead.
Sure.
Anyway,
cute.
Those special grandmas in life that
I know
we just need and hold on to and make us who we are. I have one of those, so
I do too.
Maybe not as spunky as breaking into the zoo is this one, but a grandma who always did fun things and made everything special.
That's awesome.
You will love it. I gave it 4 stars.
It's on my list. It's hard to go wrong too with Fred.
Yes. Yes. It's been on my list for a really long time, and I don't know why. I mean, I'm sad I didn't read it sooner, but I'm glad I finally did.
I actually think I have that one in book form.
Oh, do you?
And I just haven't.
You just need to pick it up and read it.
Yeah.
It's really good. I loved it. Loved it. So...
Okay, tell us the title again.
My Grandmother Asked Me to Tell You She's Sorry by Frederick Backman.
Okay. All right, so the first one on my list is a book that I've read and not listened to. I know I listened to a majority.
Awesome.
I've decided I need to read more. I do love reading, and it was affirmed to me again that I just love reading a book. Mm-hmm. So I read Scythe by Neil Shusterman.
So my boys have both read it.
Have they?
And...
What did they think?
Oh, they loved it. They loved it.
Yeah.
And I actually put it on my list because I don't typically read the same books my boys do.
Yeah. It's a different... What would you even call it? Dystopian.
Yeah.
So to give you a little bit of background, it's about the world in the future.
Mm-hmm.
We as humans have overcome... any health ailment that you can imagine, we can cure it. You're never going to get sick. And you're never going to die. Like, we know
just
how to,
forever.
Like, live and live and live and live forever. And they've created this ultimate, like, being, which is the cloud.
Mm-hmm.
And the you talk to the cloud, and the cloud gives you information. And it kind of oversees society to make sure that, like, you know, you can't commit crimes. Everything is, you know... Anyway, it just keeps peace... within the society.
Yeah.
But because of population control, you know, right. if everyone can still have children and you can have lots of children.
Die.
Right. Because once you get, you can turn, they call it turning a corner, which is when you basically turn your clock back and you can turn back into your like 20s. I don't think you can go past 20 young. Right. But right. you can start over again, your adulthood, and live till you're 80 and then turn it again and go back to 20 wow. again. And you can choose whatever age. Maybe you don't want to ever go younger than 40. Or maybe you don't ever want to get older than 40. It doesn't matter. It's your choice. You can turn the clock whenever you want.
And your life is completely different. You're not living your same... Oh, there's no ailments. I was going to say, well, maybe I... But there's no ailments.
There's
so.
No ailments. And no, like, you still have your children. Like, yeah. so now you're just younger than your children. So let's say you get 80 and you turn a corner and you're 20. You choose to be 20 again. You might have, like, 50-year-old children. And you're 20. Well, your body looks 20, but your brain is still you. And you're still
with
their
all
parent.
Your experiences.
Yes, and you're still their parent, and your family is still just your family, right?
Okay.
And you could have grandchildren that are older than you. It's just yeah. the way it all works out. You just don't know. So your age, they really don't keep track of your age because of all of that.
Okay.
And the real thing that comes into play here is population. Because people are still having children. If you're going back to your 20s all the time, you can have a family again if you yeah. wanted to. And so they do need to keep a handle on population. So they have created an order of scythes, which are basically authorized killers. And when a scythe kills you, because that's the thing, like, let's say you were in an accident and you get hit by a bus,
mm-hmm.
and your body... dies. It's not really dead. It's deadish.
Okay.
Okay. And they have all of the technology and medicine needed to bring you back.
To fix you at
yes.
that point.
And you're not okay. really dead. Okay. And they will do that over and over. When a scythe kills you, however they kill you, they will not bring you back.
Okay.
You are done for good. And the scythedom,
mm-hmm.
this order, is not overseen by the cloud. They are able to come and function without interference from the cloud.
Okay.
And that being, whatever
yeah.
it is, has, you know, there is an agreement that it will stay out. They might see, it still sees everything that's going on, but they will not interfere.
It won't interfere.
They have been given this.
So they have this freedom to go about.
Because what they do, you know, and this is years and years, they've been going through this now for hundreds and hundreds of years and doing this. And when they began, they took, you know, it's very serious. It's a solemn responsibility. You are trained. You do not marry. You do not have, because you can't be swayed.
Are you chosen or
you
choose?
Are chosen.
You are chosen.
To be okay. an apprentice. And you can say no, but it's such an honor.
Honor. To be chosen.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. And you apprentice and you learn for a year and you have to pass tests and there's a way. It's not just a quick, okay, now you go and do this. And they have, you know, quotas that you have to kill so many, but not more than, right,
mm-hmm.
per quarter or something of the year. And so there's rules that they themselves have put upon themselves
mm-hmm.
to try to keep things, to keep the honor and to keep the sanctity of death and, you know, the responsibility, and so that you can understand the weight of what you're doing
mm-hmm.
and you don't take it seriously. So the book starts with these two young people, a girl and a boy, who have been chosen to be an apprentice for this one scythe. And he, normally you do not take two, but he can't quite choose between the two of them and has decided he will train them both and then pick one at the end of the training. So one will go back to their lives and one will become a scythe. So as these two start training and they are underneath this very wise scythe and he's teaching them, you know, how heavy it is to choose someone to die. Like how you go about making that choice of the person that's going to die.
Right.
And it's very interesting. And you watch them make these choices and help him make these choices and learn the different ways that they are going to kill.
I can't wait to read this.
Because it's not like, okay, you're going to die and I'm just going to give you a pill and you die. They
right.
might be. That might be your way of death. But he takes it so seriously that he's, you know, he goes much deeper than that and says, you know, well, one in every 13,000, blah, 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 will die from drowning. And so someone might drown. And that means they hold your head under the water and you're going to drown. Okay. You might get, he might even choose a child that, you know, accidentally shot themselves with a gun. That happened in real human life. And so he will, you might be chosen. You know, or, you know, that's kind of how this Scythe, because they all are able to choose their own kind of way. Okay. But there's another Scythe who's kind of gathered his own little grouping of followers who's decided that mass killings is his forte. And so he'll go onto an airplane and kill everyone on the airplane.
Oh my gosh.
Okay, so that's just one example. I'm not going to give away all the other things. So these are like
different ways that we do see death in the real world. Now, and they're just simulating them.
Yes, but there is something that happens when you read this book, like this moral code within you starts to say, wait, that's not right. Yeah. Or, but they don't have rules anyway. So it's fascinating because it messes with your psyche.
I'm liking this. I mean, it's been on my list for a while, and I've been wanting to read it, but I want to read it even more, and it's making me think of Gathering Blue, Lois Lowry's, what's her first one? Gathering Blue is the sequel.
I don't know.
It's that utopian, they made a movie out of it.
Why? Gathering
Blue? It's not coming
Blue?
To me. My kids are probably yelling right now. By the way, my mother-in-law, I'm telling
the
this
giver.
On here. The Giver, yes. My mother-in-law took my kids on a trip, and she was listening to our podcast in the car.
Oh.
And so they were listening, and then you talked about the vagina.
Oh, no! Oh, no! Did I scar them forever?
No, and I just said, when she told me, I was like, well, I've got two boys and a girl. I'm like, well, they all need to know this stuff. It'll just help them in life. And she's like, no, we shut it off. Carter told me it was too much for him.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. I'm so sorry.
No.
Maybe we need to say beforehand. Adults books are being talked about. Not always. This is a youth fiction, actually.
We're pretty open in my family, so.
I would have loved to be in that car.
I know. It was kind of funny.
That's hilarious.
Yes, but like The Giver, where they're trying to maintain sadness, and you know, they're trying to control everything so much. That's the utopian dystopian society of let's control what we can to prevent pain, sadness.
Yeah,
you know,
so it's very interesting because it's kind of becomes as you get, and that's just the beginning, right? I'm only giving you the beginning, so there's like a whole book here, and it's about what happens between these two apprentices and the Scythedom, as they evaluate what's happening within their, you know, whatever you want to call them, within their order. And because they have the ability to set rules and punish and whatever. And how they, what people are allowing, what they allow people to get away with and what they punish. And what, the way that that all works. And I'll be honest, I'm squeamish, you know, and this is about death, and there's a lot of death, and you're seeing a lot of different ways people are dying, and that for me was a lot, I'll say that, even though I really liked the book. I gave the book 4 stars. I really liked it, but I feel like you should be forewarned.
About?
Yeah, like, it's kind of bloody.
Okay.
You're reading bloody.
Okay.
So I guess it all just kind of depends on how vibrant your imagination is, because it can be a lot. There are certain parts that are a lot, like, gory.
Yeah.
Because they're death.
Because they're killing people in different ways.
Right. And so there's that you need to be thinking about.
Okay.
But it also makes you think about, like, just the very pit of right and wrong. Like, everything else goes away. There's no religion. There's nothing like that. But just as a person living with other people, what's right and what's wrong. Right.
Without religion, anything else, we still have a moral compass inside. We still have right and wrong.
Right.
Without
and what,
those boundaries.
What doing wrong things does to you.
Interesting.
It's very interesting. And this is a book, I think there's 3 books.
I was
going to
say,
it's
it's a sequel, right?
Yeah. There's 3, and this is just the first one. So I know there's more out there. I thought they did a good job, like, wrapping it up. I didn't know how it was really going to end. And there was a lot of surprises. Like, there was things that I didn't even see coming. Anyway, it was good.
It was good.
It was good.
When you say, you know, prepare yourself, it's gruesome and bloody, it made me think, would you want to see this made into a movie? Could it be made into a movie?
It could be. I'm sure that there's movie makers out there that know how to do this in a right way, but it would probably... it would all depend on what they show. If you read it, though, it's gruesome.
Okay.
I think that you should be... And this is a young adult
fiction. Yeah, I was going to say, that's why I asked, because I knew my oldest son had read it, and then I was substituting in the middle school last year over a couple days, and I saw multiple kids with this book, and I thought, so one of the kids with it in the class, I was like, this must be a really good book. I've seen so many kids reading it, and he was like, yes, it's so good. I'm telling me all about it. And I was like, ooh, maybe I should read it. So I went home and ordered it because I thought Bennett borrowed it from the library and read it. I bought it so that Carter could read it because I thought
he would like it. Yeah.
And then I could read it too.
Right.
So I have the book, but I haven't read it yet. But I know it is a young adult. I think it's on the list in either 7th or 8th grade as one of the options to
read.
It's
good. But it really makes, and I think that's why it is.
Yeah.
Because it's making you look at yourself and go, look, when you cross a line too far into things that aren't right, it messes with you.
Yeah.
You know, long term. It is. And you don't feel good. So you want to make sure you're staying in a place that's good. And I loved that about the book and finding ways, like, even though there's a structure of rules, if there's a wrong rule, or even if there's people that are doing things within the rules that aren't right, you can get around it and find ways to, like, be really good that's, like, actually good, not just pretending to be good because you're following the rules, right? Like, they're pretending to be good by they're saying, oh, we're within our guidelines, but what they're doing felt not good.
But that can still be not right, even though the rule says it's okay.
Right.
What a...
So it's kind of... And I'm sure that they're not thinking those things, you know, as they're reading, they're just reading.
Right.
But those lessons are there.
That's there.
Even though they aren't, you know, consciously recognizing them.
Right.
And that's why I love books like that.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I gave it 4 stars. It's 4.31 on Goodreads or something. 4.3 something on Goodreads. It's a well-rated book. And I thought it was good. And I read it. I read it in a week.
Read a book.
And for me, that's hard to do.
I agree.
So it was a good one.
That's a good one.
So anyway, excellent. That's my first book.
Yeah, I'm excited for that one. My next book is, I'm going on the theme of longest titles again, The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo.
I've read that.
You have?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's been a while, though, so you're going to have to refresh
me. I thought it was fairly... Oh, it came out in 2017.
Yeah, I read it last year.
I've seen it on a lot of... lists lately, so I thought it was fairly new. But
so
no.
I'm curious as what you thought.
Okay.
Now I need to know, what did I give it?
Please look it up. Let's compare.
Okay.
I'm interested. The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo by Taylor Jenkins Reid. And this is a story, it's historical fiction. It takes place in, like, starting out in the 40s, would you say? The 1940s, mid-40s, late-40s. And she is, her mother's died. Her father kind of gives her a icky feeling. She doesn't trust being alone with him. She's an only child. And so as soon as she can, she finds her way to get out of Hell's Kitchen, which was not a good place at the time.
Right.
And get to Hollywood and be a star. Like, that's her purpose.
That's all she wants.
That's all she wants to do. And she's going to take advantage of anything.
She will do anything to get
there. She'll do anything to get there. And she does. So she, at the age of 14, kind of seduces a guy and gets him to take her there. And she marries him. So this is husband number one. And so she gets there, she gets a job in a cafe where she knows a lot of famous actors hang out, and to get in with, you know, acting and producers, and she uses her looks, and she's got a great figure, and she's got a nice chest that helps her along the way. So that's kind of the beginning where she starts out. The premise of the story is she's 80-something.
Yes.
And she decides, she's kind of gone underground and stayed out of the limelight for a long time. She hasn't done interviews. She hasn't done anything with the press or any pictures or anything. And she chooses this young journalist to write her story. And so this journalist kind of comes over weeks, months.
Couple of weeks, yeah, I think. Couple I don't of think weeks, it's that long.
And sits with her and hears her life story and is asking her questions about it. And so she goes through her life story and these seven husbands she's had. And you find out kind of why it's been seven husbands, why so many.
And the truth behind these marriages.
And the truth behind the marriage, exactly, the truth behind the marriages and what she's done to position herself to have been so successful in all the movies she's done and in Hollywood, and everyone just loved her, and different movies she took and different parts she played, and it's just this whole long story. So I will tell you that it has some raunchy.
Yes.
Scenes in it. You just fast forward or skip past those or read them and enjoy them if you like. But I do want to give that caveat on it that this is her life and she's had seven husbands.
And she's in Hollywood and she didn't just get there because she's a great actress.
No. And also that most actresses at that time, this is how they got there.
Yeah.
This was the protocol to get the jobs in the films. Yeah. So it wasn't just her. Not that that makes it right. I'm not saying it's right or wrong. This was her journey. She chose everything. And she says, I don't regret anything I did. I took advantage of everything I could to position myself for what I wanted.
Yeah.
And she got what she wanted.
Yep.
And was successful.
Very.
There is a lot of heartbreak and tragedy in there. And mistakes that are made. And forgiveness. And love in a very different way that I maybe don't think about for that era.
Right.
Especially with women. So she's a woman and there is a, she's marginalized in a lot of ways,
yep.
Especially in her industry and for her time and for,
she's treated kind of like she's dumb and
yeah,
just like a, she's a figure.
Yes, absolutely.
Not like a person to give input.
Right.
She doesn't really know what she's doing.
Right. Would you add any more to that? I don't want to give
away either. I feel like it's one that you do need to read to learn her story.
For all of that to unveil to see why. And it's, I gave it 5 stars.
Did you really?
I did. I thought it was a beautiful life story. Even though, you're going to totally disagree with me on this. Even though it was, like, I felt so sorry for her and tragic. But I think it shows such a good story of feminism and being a feminist at an early time.
And when, if you look at it that way, I could see.
And I read it right after The Vanishing Half, and when we compare her to Stella.
Yes, she's the one who pretends she was white.
She pretended she was white. And we talked in that episode about how she had gotten out. She had all this money and she could help any way she could have given money anonymously
sure.
to help other people. And she didn't. Well, Evelyn Hugo
does help people.
I mean, not the same situation by all means.
Sure.
But she couldn't come out. She was trapped living this persona. Mm-hmm. She couldn't because her career would be ended in a way, and you'll have to read to find all about that app. But she does want to do something for other women, other people in her position, and she can give money, and that's what she can do. And she does and continued to do her whole life a lot of money to organizations that she held dear to her heart.
Yes.
So
I gave it 2 stars. Okay, this is why, though. So we disagree on this book.
I don't give out my 5 stars.
Not that it was, like, an awful book, but when I'm giving out my stars, it's, like, whether I'd recommend it for someone else to read. And this one, it just wasn't for me. So this is why, though, because I feel like she was a horrifically selfish person.
Absolutely. But
and maybe
don't
that's
you think
honest?
She learned from that? It was very honest.
Because I think that there are a lot of selfish people in the world.
She learned her lesson.
Yeah,
I think she came back from it.
But on her 12th hour. Like, it was just a little late for me. I mean, she was trying to right her wrongs. I will agree with you. She did at the end.
I wouldn't say the 12th hour. I'd give it like a 9 o'clock hour.
Really?
I'd say the last 10 years of her life, or 8 years.
Yeah, except for like even this journalist brought in. Like, that's, she's going to die.
That's true. And what, yeah. You're right.
I'm just saying.
Right there. But that is the 12th hour. The last thing she had to take care of.
Okay, that's true. I will concede. I just felt like this whole, you're waiting until the end of the book for her to like come around. And she just, every single thing she did, it really didn't matter who she hurt. It really didn't. She hurt everyone around her all the time because she needed to be perceived a certain way by the world. You know, her image and all of that really trumped everything, her whole life.
Yeah.
Even in the end, when she was doing good things and whatever, her image was never tarnished. She never did anything that would tarnish her own image, except for
having her life story written. Well, then it is. But it's
going to be out when she's dead. So she doesn't have to live with that.
Right. That's
and that
true.
Really bothered me. And I think that bothered her as well.
That she didn't want to leave this earth without...
The truth.
The truth being written.
At least she gave that. So maybe I should give her a third star. I couldn't like her. And maybe that was my problem. So, well written, yes. Again, we have different, like...
We do.
Criteria.
Uh-huh.
And that's good, I think. But, yeah, it was a well-written book. I think if we agreed
on everything, this would be boring.
Yeah. So, for me...
But, yeah.
I read it, and I didn't, like, sit and want to quit ever. I finished it, and it was fine. But I was like, ew.
I loved it, and I think it's one of those that will be a lasting thought. Like, sometimes, I read so much that sometimes you look back at covers and be like,
I
know I read that, but I have no idea what the storyline is.
Yes.
This is one that will stand out. I will never forget this storyline.
And it was a year ago.
Yeah.
So you're right there.
I think it will leave me thinking.
Definitely.
And I really
And you know what else I must say? It did make me look at people in Hollywood and go, we really need to stop. Like, as a society, trying to idolize these people.
Right.
Like,
putting them on these pedestals because...
We've got to stop.
Not only... Like, that's... What is that doing for us? We're never going to measure up. But also, the pressure it puts on them. Like, after I read this, I was I don't want to
not
ever
even
live that
be
lifestyle.
Themselves.
Because they can't ever...
Be true.
Be themselves. They can't ever get away from being recognized.
And the judgment. And the... Yeah.
Yes. And the...
Everyone's
you do
opinions.
For a part, and the things, you know, you have to be like, you know, you this movie's too soon to do. You need to, like, there's so much that goes into it.
Yeah.
A lot of choice is really taken away from them.
Yeah.
And yes, this was the 40s, 50s, and you know.
I'm sure it's not.
Up a little further, but
hugely it's different.
Not, I'm sure it's not hugely different now. I'm sure it's come a long way, but I'm sure
it's
a lot of it still rings true.
If you've read this book... What did you think?
Yeah.
Readers?
Who do you side with?
I know. Did you love it?
Are you a Sarah or are you a Jamie?
I'd love to hear. Please tell us what you think.
I love it when we have such differing opinions.
I do too.
Things.
I actually do too. It makes a really good conversation.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which is my favorite. I love to hear why you didn't like it and yeah.
And I can see your side.
Yeah.
I still didn't love it.
Okay.
Or love her, I should say.
Yeah. That's okay.
Okay. Okay, so the next one on mine, which is really interesting, get ready for the title.
Okay.
The 7.5 Deaths of Evelyn Hardcastle.
No way! Are you kidding me?
No. Have you read this one?
No.
I know.
It's almost like it should be a sequel to The 7 Husbands of Evelyn Hugo.
I know. When you said that, I'm like, oh my gosh, that's on my list when you started saying it. And then I'm like, wait, no, it's different.
The 7.5
Deaths of Evelyn Hardcastle. And this is by Stuart Turton.
Okay. I have never heard of it.
I don't even know where I found it. I found it somewhere.
Okay.
Goodreads 3.9.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give you the premise of the book. It is about, it starts right away with this man, like, who's been unconscious and he becomes conscious, right? Like, he wakes up from being unconscious. And he's in a forest and he doesn't know where he is or why he's there. It's dark and he's scared and there's a woman screaming for help and he doesn't know how to get to her, but he doesn't really know who he is. Like, he's very confused. And he's trying to go help this girl that's screaming and he can't find her because it's dark. And then he runs into a dark figure who puts something in his pocket and tells him to close his eyes and to not move and blah, blah, blah. So he does that because he's very scared. He doesn't move.
Yeah.
And he counts or whatever. I don't even remember how long he stays there. But he stays there for a while until it's quiet and he can't hear the girl anymore. And he hears some awful things happen to the girl, he thinks. But he's not sure. And because his eyes are still closed. And it ends and he just realizes, like, he's like, I've got to get help. I'm not going to be able to find this girl. I'm here alone. I'm defenseless. I'm unarmed. Yeah. I need to get help. And so he starts running to find help. And he comes to this castle and, or a manor, mm-hmm. maybe. And he goes and he pounds on the doors of the manor and it's like barely dusk now. And they let him in and there's someone in the forest that needs help. And she's screaming and we've got to help her. And they look at him like he's crazy. And this man comes up and he's like, oh, sir. And he tells him his name. You know, let's go to your room, and takes him to the room and tells him to calm down and whatever. And anyway, basically tells him who he is and whatever. Slowly you learn that he is, who his character is. He's like a doctor and whatever. And he keeps talking about this woman in the forest and they're saying, he heard her name. He knew her name somehow. That's one thing he knew when she was screaming. He knew that it was this woman named Anna. And so he's begging for them to go help this girl named Anna. And they're like, we have never heard of an Anna. There is no Anna here. And we're in the middle of nowhere. Like, it's just us. Like, anyway. So come to find out, he goes throughout his day and it's very confusing. And he's trying to figure out what's happening in this place. And when he goes to sleep, he wakes up in another person's body within the manor.
Okay.
Okay. Are you confused?
So he lives at this manor, but he didn't remember that.
He was a visitor.
He'd been invited
to stay there with other people. Okay. They were having like a weekend at this manor. And it's large, obviously. Okay. Everyone has a room and a butler and a whatever. It's old in London times.
Okay.
So anyway, he wakes up in someone else's body and he's experiencing the day all over again.
Through the same day, from
a new person's view. Ooh. Sounds very creative. Now, I was really confused for a good chunk of the book, mm-hmm. trying to follow along and understand what was happening, mm-hmm. and all of the characters, because there's a lot of characters in this house, mm-hmm. and it's obviously a mystery, and they're trying to solve this mystery, and there's this man that kind of comes in and gives him clues, and the idea is, you know, 20 years ago, this little boy died at this manor in, he drowned, or they think he drowned, whatever. And it was kind of an unsolved murder, mm-hmm. 20 years ago. And everyone had their suspicions. Well, all these same people were invited back now.
Back to the manor.
Okay. And they think they know, the person who they believe, there's going to be another murder. That's mm-hmm. what I'll say. There's going to be another murder. And his job in reliving this day is to find out who that murderer is.
Okay.
Okay. He's going to, at the end of the day. At first, I really liked it. My problem was, it was 17 hours long, the book. It's really long. And before he really understands, even he's confused about what's happening. Mm-hmm. And it takes him half the book to really grasp what he's supposed to be doing. So he goes through a few, you know, people having their days a few times, like three or four people, before he really grasps what his job is.
Okay.
And what he's supposed to be doing here. And so I felt like that first chunk was really unnecessary. Like, if he could, I felt like he really needed to grasp what was happening faster than he did. It took way too long
to get to that point.
Because it is a cool idea.
Yeah.
And it goes a lot more places than just this. So then you start to grasp that concept of him trying to solve this murder. And yet, it's way bigger than that. It's so much more than just this day and these people. And and why he's there. And there's other players involved that are also trying to solve the mystery and that are kind of like trying to sabotage him from learning. And they also want to learn the murderer first. It's who can figure it out first. And so there's a lot of characters into play and it's confused. It can be quite confusing. I felt like that first part made it way more confusing.
Okay.
In my opinion. Like if we could have just, you know, maybe she only has 5 deaths or something because each night she died, right? And that's why there's 7.5. It takes him that long to, you know, to get towards the end. Anyway, it was, in that sense, it was really fascinating. It was like a very different thought concept than I'd ever had or had read before. I think that was really interesting. But it was a little convoluted. It gets a little bit too big, in my opinion. To keep track
of everything.
Yes. And everyone. It was too much. And then, but it did, once it finished and it wrapped up, I did like the ending. And I did like that part of it. But because of everything, like the drag and the length and the hard to get into and the confusion side of it, I only gave it 2 stars.
2 stars. So it kind of reminds me of Agatha Christie's And Then There Were None. Have you read any Agatha Christie?
I have, but not that one.
Which is the, kind of the same premise. There's a mystery that was never solved, and so somebody brings all these people to the castle where it happened.
Right.
Type thing. But I can see, because based off that, there were quite a few people, and I had to keep a list on the whiteboard.
Oh, really?
Of all the different characters and what their backstories were and everything, because yes. it's just a lot to keep track of.
Well, and where he jumps where. Into yeah, different so people. I was like, okay, now same. Who is this guy? Like, yeah.
Yeah.
It was super confusing.
Okay.
That was my only downside, because it's a cool thought, and I think it was a little bit extreme when you start to learn the bigger picture, because right now, you know, you start just as small and you get presented more and more of the bigger picture. It was a little too big, in my opinion, but it was cool. I'd say 2 stars. If you really love, like, mysteries and you want to try to solve a mystery, this is your book.
Yeah. Sounds like if you love an Agatha Christie book.
There you go.
You would love this book.
Yes. Right. But it was a little bit much for me.
A little much for you.
I said 2 stars.
Okay. I'm going to go... I read another book about a president this month. So this... I did just read this one. It wasn't one from last year. But I read Killing Kennedy, The End of Camelot by Bill O'Reilly. Okay. And so Bill O'Reilly has a series. I didn't know this when I read the one about the Reagans.
Yes.
He has a killing series.
Oh.
The Bill O'Reilly's killing series. And this one is the one about Kennedy. And I definitely knew more about his assassination than I did about Reagan's assassination attempt. But I didn't know all the ins and outs of the Kennedy presidency and what was going on in the White House, which was... fascinating.
Okay.
And horrifying. Like, it's sad. It really is a sad presidency in a lot of ways. I didn't know that JFK, his health was so bad.
Oh.
So he had Addison's disease, which led to a lot of other issues of being tired. He had chronic headaches type things, and he blames that something else can heal that, but we'll skip over that part. horrible back.
Oh.
Really bad back, where he wore a brace most of the time, which he's always looked at as having very, very good posture.
Yeah.
But it's because he's got this really super tight brace on.
Oh, and, interesting.
That gives him, it pulls him up. But he had a severely bad back. It caused him a lot of pain. He had overcome death twice before he was shot. Once in World War II, and then once again the second time he had surgery on his back, and it got infected and it got sepsis, and he was in a coma and almost died.
I didn't know that.
So the assassination wasn't his first skirt with death. And his health was really quite bad and caused him quite a lot of pain. He, for the pain, for his back, he swam every day. So he had quite a routine that he stuck to every day. He took an afternoon nap every day, like a 45-minute nap. And then, he just had a very, very routine schedule. But the unique thing about his swimming every day, there's a swimming pool in the White House, is that he swam completely naked.
Why?
It doesn't ever really say why. He just preferred that, swam naked. And that sometimes he invited other people to come swimming with him, male and female. And
the, while he still swam naked.
Uh-huh. And the males were more people that he was doing business with in the White House. And they had to swim naked too. And if they wanted to come and have a meeting with him during his swimming time. And some of them did. So
what?
I think about like our presidency now and scandals that have come up in, you know, some of the more recent presidents. And I think this is nothing new.
No.
It's just gotten out more.
We just now have social media.
We have media that makes things fly like that. So he had lots of women on the side. Like,
yeah,
there's the rumor with Marilyn Monroe, and it's probably true. There's a lot of, you know, and Jackie knew.
Yeah.
He was sleeping around too, and it broke her heart. She wanted to be the only one for him, but they kind of just turned a blind eye to it. Like, they didn't ever discuss it. It wasn't open, but she knew it was happening.
That makes me so sad.
And the Secret Service men prevented her from ever walking in on anything, or, I mean, that was part of their full-time job was, like, if he was swimming and was entertaining a couple girls, like, they stood at the door and made sure she, you know, didn't accidentally come in to swim at that time too.
But she knows.
So their job was like, she knows, but she never actually saw firsthand that it was happening, which was a kind of, I looked at it as a better way to, you know, like, you know, but until you see it, you don't really accept that it's really happening. There's still maybe that little bit of doubt that it's not. And so I think the Secret Service men and her security detail was very, very careful to make sure that that didn't.
That makes me want to cry.
I know. It's really sad that it's just so prevalent in our presidents. That
I know. What is your deal?
Yeah. So the Kennedy family just had a lot of tragedy, and they had a couple miscarriages and a stillborn baby, and then they had their two, Caroline and it's not coming to me,
I don't know their children.
The second son's name. But then she got pregnant another time after that, and they were both really excited, and this kind of really brought them together. He was much more doting and caring and was excited for this pregnancy and scared because they'd had so many other issues he was worried for. And she did go into preterm labor and had the baby early. I don't think it says how early. But the baby's lungs weren't developed, and this was at a time they didn't have the technology we have now. And so after a couple days, the baby did end up dying.
Aww.
And she was heartbroken and in a depression, and he was heartbroken. But he's president at this time, and he has to go on, and he's concerned about his wife, and he's mourning the death of his son.
That's awful.
Which is, yeah, awful. And the son died 52 days before JFK was assassinated.
Oh my gosh.
So they're dealing with all of this within this other tragic thing right around the corner for her.
Oh my gosh.
And it goes into the details about, it talks a lot about Lee Harvey Oswald and his life story. So it's kind of juxtapositioning the two stories together as they come to ultimately what happened, and discusses that and his family, his wife and baby, and then after he shot, what happens, and Jackie at the hospital is just heartbreaking. Like, she doesn't want to let go of him because then she knows he's dead, but once she lets go, then he's gone.
Really gone.
He's no longer hers. And so they have a really hard time getting her to let go of him, to get him out of the car and take him into the hospital. And it's just it's tragic. Like,
oh my gosh.
The whole story. Anyway.
That's so sad.
And it is a really sad, the Kennedys, like, they just have this,
it's really sad,
bad luck following the whole family, it seems like. So, but it was a really good, it was fairly short, well written, just little glimpse, nothing too in depth, because it went over quite a few years, and just give you little synopsises of here and here and what the presidency looked like. So
that's cool.
I think very eye-opening to another president.
Absolutely.
I gave it 3 stars. I thought it was great. You know, I take Bill O'Reilly with a grain of salt. I think he's a good journalist and was a good writer, but maybe not such a, I don't know. You take Bill O'Reilly as you want to take Bill O'Reilly, but I've enjoyed the two books, the Killing Kennedy and the one about Reagan, the attempted killing of Reagan. And I thought they were both good books.
That's very so, good. All right. Well. I love it. Okay, the next one on my list was A Study in Charlotte by Brittany Cavallaro. Have you read that one?
I have not.
It's a newer one, I think, and it's like a... It's okay, so the premise is that Sherlock Holmes, like descendant, like his granddaughter, great-granddaughter, and Watson's great-grandson.
Okay.
Right? Like, they just, it's kind of about their families, like the Holmes family and the Watson family, how they just have a very interesting relationship.
Okay.
And throughout the generations, you know, the Watsons have a chip on their shoulder about the Holmes, that they never were given the credit that they deserved in, like, all of it. And, you know, that the Holmes are kind of crazy. They think the Holmes are crazy. And the Holmes, like, are just so indifferent. They could care less about the Watsons. You know, like, they're just busy solving mysteries. And that's a skill that they have always, like, stroked. Is that the word? Like, they've like just really invested. Yes. Really, like, from a very young age, you're taught to solve mysteries.
Yeah.
And be watchful and take into account everything that you see.
Yeah.
And so...
Tell me the name of this again.
It's called A Study in Charlotte.
A Study in Charlotte. Okay. Sorry.
Continue yep. on. And so it's kind of about how these descendants, these younger generations, they're in high school. They're both sent away to a boarding school and end up meeting together.
Okay.
Okay. So their families don't have a really great relationship anymore because of whatever feelings they had about these grandparents. Mm-hmm. But here they are together. And the grandson, he is of Watson. It's the grandson of Watson or great-grandson of Watson. He is, like, really excited to meet Charlotte is her name. And she's the great-granddaughter of Holmes. Okay. And he's really looking forward to it. He knows that she's there when he's going and moving, and he's kind of thinks like they're destined to be friends and they're destined to have their paths crossed and they should solve mysteries and they should really do this. Yeah. And he's going to help her solve mysteries. He wants to.
So besides what the parents are thinking or the generations above are thinking, he's like, this is destined to happen.
Yeah. Cause he's gotten this scholarship and whatever. And he's like, it's meant to be. So he goes and she's like, kind of quirky, and she doesn't have a whole lot of friends, but she is really smart, and she's always very observant, and she, you know, kind of has her own, does her own thing at this school, doesn't really care what people think about her, whatever. And so she can see when they meet for the first time that her observations are very accurate, and she can just tell that he wants to be around her and hang out with her, even though he's just not really even saying anything.
Yeah.
But she's just like calls him out on it and is she's like, get over it. Like, get over yourself. Like, whatever. I don't have people. Like, I don't have a friend. Like, just do your own thing. But she's not rude, but she's kind of indifferent.
Okay.
Anyway, so there's one boy who's been trying to get her attention and has tried to date her and tried to like be involved with her and is slimy and gross and she hates him and he's done some pretty awful things in his advances towards her and he's made some comment about her at the lunch table and the boy hears it and is just outraged on her behalf. She's not even there and he attacks him and tells him never to say anything bad about her and whatever and is really mean to him. Well, a little while later he dies. And it looks like he did it. The guy did it. And so the Watson's grandson did it. And so he is kind of framed. Well, as they look a little bit closer, it kind of looks like maybe it was also Holmes. Okay? And they both kind of have a reason for him to die. So now they are forced to work together.
To figure this out because they're both on the line.
Right.
Sorry, jump in.
No, you're exactly right. So that's kind of the premise of the book, is how they go about it. It's just, there's more things that happen along the way that really are pointing at them to be guilty and how they become friends and mm-hmm. try to figure out what's really happening here.
Yeah.
It was cute. It was light. It was an easy read. I thought it would be, you know, it was just a fun, quick pickup. It's a cute, I love the premise of the story. Yeah. I haven't read any of the books. Obviously, I've seen a lot of movies of Sherlock mm-hmm. and Holmes, but I've never read any of the books, and it references the old books quite a bit.
Okay.
And it's fun. Like, I just thought it was really clever and fun and lighthearted, and to see these two characters, like, become friends, and it was cute and sweet. I loved it. I gave it 3 stars. And it's like 3.79 on Goodreads. It was awesome. Good. Yeah.
I added it to my list.
It's fun.
It looks fun and it has a super cute cover.
It has a way cute cover.
Yeah, that looks cute. So I think I would enjoy that. I'm going to add it.
Definitely.
Okay, where are we at? Have I done 3 or 4? Do I have...
3. We've done 3 so far. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's it for this episode.
Thanks for listening. I know. I hope that you found something to add to your list.
I surely have.
I love finding out what Jamie's reading so I can get more. I was just saying the ones that I have on hold, I don't know how I'm going to talk about them because they're ones Jamie's recommended.
I know that's hard because when you recommend things, I want to read it. And then if I read it, then I maybe...
We've already talked about it here.
So
I still think you should say what you think about it.
Okay. I think so, too, because that's fun to have that discussion.
Yeah.
Super fun today that you had read The 7 Lives of Evelyn Hugo so that we could discuss that.
I felt differently. Yeah. I loved it.
Yeah.
Anyway, so thanks for listening. Next week, it's our Q&A. So if you have any questions, send them our way or comments. We'd love to read them and help you out. Or
Send us an email, send us a comment anywhere or question anywhere. Also, if you've read any of these books.
Yes.
And you agreed or disagreed or...
What did you think about them?
We want to hear that too, and we'll read that here because I think that just shows more a broader point of view of books and helps other people decide which ones they want to read and which ones they'll stick away from.
Absolutely.
But yeah, I think...
Tell us what you think. We'd love to share it here.
Please.
Please rate, subscribe, and review. Remember, you can still do that today.
Enter
the contest and win your book.
Yeah.
And you can find us on Instagram and Facebook, or you can email us at thisisyourbookclubpodcast@gmail.com.
Awesome. And thank you to Amphibious Zoo for our music.
And we'll see you next week. Thanks again for listening.
I'm Jamie.
And I'm Sarah.
And this is your book club.